Well, welcome everyone once again to a Horse Around podcast. Almost told you my Orange Herd podcast. No, this would be Horse Around because Andrew Mason's with me. And after locking me up, breaking my brain twice with his ergonomic, economic, Pythagorean theorem, I don't know what else. You know, you threw the math up there, you're splitting atoms, you're hanging out with Einstein, you're coming up with all sorts of equations. And you're trying to figure out who's winning this quarterback battle. And you know what, Andrew? After a week of resisting you on the radio to your crazy theories, I've decided we're going to go ahead and give your math a try because, frankly, that may be the only way I can figure out who might actually be winning this thing.
All right. Well, I can. Do you want me to tell you how I got to the result, or do you just want me to get to the result, and then you can analyze what you think of the end result?
I'm going to leave it up to you.
Okay.
I think probably there needs to be an explanation into the math.
All right. Well, what I've settled on is this. I'm trying to get every day down to a simple number. And what I end up settling on was a soccer score, say 2-1, 3-1, 0-0 in soccer parlance. And putting it on each day, and then you take all of those, and then basically add them up, and then you get sort of your goal differential, as it were, the aggregate score. So, for example, for Thursday, I would have scored it 2-1 in favor of Simeon. I thought Simeon had the better day. I thought he was more consistent. Certainly was better out of the blocks. Had a good first drive. Couple of nice passes to Emmanuel Sanders to get to the end zone on that drive. And I'd certainly say that he took the day. And this was the seventh practice. And the way I would have it so far is I'd have 3 wins for Simeon, 2 wins for Lynch, 2 draws, but I'd have Simeon also with the most, I guess, goals and the best goal and the better goal difference. If you add up the scores of each day, say there was a couple of days that were draws, 1-1 and 0-0. There was one day I had said that last Saturday where Simeon really dominated, had him basically 5-1. There was a day that Lynch did well last Friday, had him 3-1, etc. So basically, on the whole, I'd say Simeon is up on Lynch right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with that at this point, Andrew, but what is your overall takeaway of this? You know, let's be honest about it. If we're going to ride the emotional roller coaster, which me and my partner Tyler Palumbis, and judging by what I've heard from your show, you and Mike Rice, I think we're all trying to jump off the day-to-day roller coaster that's been this quarterback battle. I mean, should we be encouraged? I don't really know how you can fully be encouraged with what we've seen out of either quarterback to this point. I mean, they both have had their moments, but they also have had just as many moments of struggle. Encouraged may be the wrong word. I'll rephrase it. Should we not be surprised after all, because this is a new offense? Did we all, media fans, maybe even the coaching staff, underestimate how long it would take two young guys to start looking comfortable in a new offense?
Yeah, and I think... Yeah, we probably maybe underestimated the time that we thought it would take. I think that's probably accurate. I think the thing is, I think we figured that at least one of them would show some consistency by this point. I think obviously with Trevor Siemian being the more experienced of the two, having the 14 starts under his belt, I think maybe the thought was that he would have become more consistent by this point. And I don't think that's happened to the degree that you would hope. Like, even though I thought he had the better day on Thursday, he still had a throw that he'd want to have back. You go to that red zone period where he had a couple of touchdowns, but then he also had an ill-advised throw and a triple coverage in the end zone that got picked off. So, you know, I think that's where the frustrating part of it is probably coming from, is that you still have the consistency issues from both quarterbacks. And I think that was probably to be expected from Paxton Lynch because he's younger. He only has the two starts. He had quite a bit of growing to do. We can go back and just look back at what was thought of him when he was drafted and how there was some thought that, hey, it might be a year or two or even 3 years before you really knew where he was going to be. So you thought, okay, there might be, you know, it might be some time before he got to the point where you could really have a good evaluation of him. But with Simeon, maybe you thought, okay, the consistency would be there a little quicker, and maybe it hasn't been there like we all would have expected. But at the same time, it is a new scheme, like you said, and maybe it's going to take some time.
You and I have covered this scheme before, and Tyler Palumbus has been very clear. Now, one of the things that I related to you earlier, but I'll repeat it here on the podcast. One of the things that made me feel pretty good about, well, pretty good is too strong a word. How about one of the things that eases some of my fears? Because right now, I'm not going to tell you I feel comfortable with what I've seen out of these practices. I just haven't. There hasn't been consistency from either guy, and not enough consistency to win a game, unfortunately, in my mind. But again, this was an offense that when Kyle Orton, a 5-6 year starter at the time, and he came in and he tried to run it for Josh McDaniels, he struggled to the point where anyone that went to the stadium practice in 2009 should remember that we pretty much, not me, but the fan base booed that team off the field because the offense looked horrible at that time with a talented receiver in Brandon Marshall and a talented receiver in Eddie Royal. So this is not the first time this offense has proven to be a challenge for a quarterback just jumping into it for the first time. And frankly, we know it's a challenging offense for young quarterbacks as well. So again, there's a precedent set that this is going to take some time. I guess the other thing that I'm starting to wonder with Trevor, I kind of wonder, you know, is Trevor having, like, I feel like Trevor knows the playbook, and I think he showed that in OTAs, and I think he shows it during the scripted periods a little more even than Paxton. Where I feel like Trevor's maybe having the problem is we've always been told this offense offers answers for any defense that you look at, but you have to know what play that is. And I'm starting to wonder maybe if Trevor's just not struggling to get to the right play.
That's a good point. And that may be something that's just going to take some time, and it may be something that if he's the starter, it may be a work in progress. Where you're talking about getting in the right play might not be something that is optimal until midseason, perhaps. And I don't know what the solution would be in the interim if he's not at that point early in the regular season. I don't know. Now, that being said, Mike McCoy has often pointed out that, you know, this offense can go in a lot of different directions, and you play to the strengths of the guys that you have. And we've seen how the scheme can be taken in a radically different direction for, say, Tim Tebow, just to get by for a few weeks and make the most out of that particular season, that particular quarterback. So you can – There's a lot of things you can do to compensate if there's a struggle point, whether it's in terms of getting in the right play or something else. Like, let's say the offensive line is a weak point. Well, you can do a lot of things in terms of the screen pass game, for instance, to have the quarterback get the ball out quicker. And you know what? Maybe that may be a possible solution in terms of getting in the right play, is emphasizing the screen game more, emphasizing, you know, quick reads more. I mean, one thing that was promising, I think, today, referring to Thursday, and this was actually with Paxton Lynch out there, a couple of the best plays that were run when he was on the field were plays to the running backs. A nice wheel route to Jamal Charles, and then a little swing pass in the right flat to C.J. Anderson, where he makes one guy miss, and all of a sudden he's upfield, and that thing looked like it could have gone for a long touchdown if it was in game conditions. You're getting the ball in space to playmakers who can make people miss. B, you're maybe helping the offensive line, which is going to be a work in progress in and of itself. And C, maybe you're going to help out the quarterbacks with that as well, because those are the kind of quick read plays where you're kind of giving him, you know, you're giving him a primary option and setting up a play where the defense might not be able to react quickly to a back coming out of the backfield, or a back, you know, whether he's running a wheel route or he's flaring out in the flat. Maybe those are plays that can help the offense, whether you're talking about helping the quarterback or helping the line through some initial struggles. There are ways that they might be able to get around some of the issues that could pop up.
Well, look, you and I talked about this during your afternoon shift on Orange and Blue 760. Again, we invite you to come and listen to the station that is all Broncos 24/7. Andrew Mason and I, he on the afternoon shift, me on the morning shift, hanging out with you daily, bringing you the best Broncos coverage, because it's a partnership between both the team and iHeartMedia, which means the team helps us provide the best coverage for you, and iHeartMedia gives you the power of the iHeartRadio app, so you can download it to your phone and catch us anywhere in the world that you choose to. And I know Mike and Andrew in particular, Mike Rice and Andrew Mason in particular, this past Wednesday, reached out to a lot of parts of the globe to talk about this quarterback situation. Andrew, as we talk about the quarterback situation and trying to figure out who the winner of the job may be, and that seems to be what everybody wants to know, I don't know about you, but for me, I'm starting to feel like our truest test of this thing to figure out who may be the opening day starter, even more so than the games, may be the practices against San Francisco, because I think, you know, I think we'll see some more truer, tricky looks in those games versus putting out any tape that any other team in the league that plays either the Broncos or Niners could study. And I feel like we could learn a lot from those practices as far as which quarterback's ready to go live with this offense. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think you take those two practices, the game against San Francisco and then the game against Chicago next week. I think you put those 4 days together. And, I mean, I don't know what the exact equation may end up being for Vance Joseph, but if I were guessing just based on what he has said about the importance of gameplay, what some of the players have said about the importance of gameplay and going against other teams, I would almost say that may end up being roughly 50% of the decision. Certainly, it's going to play an outsized role in deciding who the quarterback is going to be, and it may well play a role in some other position battles as well. And so that's why, even though we're obviously focusing on the practices right now and we're dissecting every play, every rep, every series, that it's possible that by the time even this team comes out of the Chicago game at this time next week, the landscape may look a lot different, just because maybe one quarterback has played better, one quarterback has played worse. We may be looking at a different landscape at quite a few positions, actually, but certainly quarterback may look a lot different based on what happens in that game and then what happens in the practices. So that's why this whole thing, I mean, it's fascinating to talk about right now, and obviously until there's a decision, this is topic one, and it will remain that way. And I can't, and believe me, I understand why it's what everyone wants to talk about. I think we all get it, even though I think we're all kind of repeating ourselves at this point. I think there's an understanding. Until this is resolved, this is what everyone wants to talk about. We get it. We understand. But I really think there's not going to be anything resembling clarity until you start getting to the games and getting to the days that we see other teams that will have some different things to throw at you and won't really have a clue what the tendencies are going to be from this offense and vice versa.
So as Bronco fans, can we at least take that this defense is going to be pretty good? Is that the one thing maybe we can rest our hat on?
Yes. Now it'll be interesting to see whether some of the success that the run game has had is a result of improvement on the offensive line, or maybe some still lingering issues in the run defense. Maybe it may be a little column A, maybe a little column B, but I think this defense on the whole looks powerful. The secondary, you know, I think as long as the no-fly zone stays healthy, this is the best secondary in football. There's no weak point among those top four, top five guys. I mean, Bradley Roby, You could put him on any other team and he'd be starting, and he'd be the number one cornerback, I'd say, for just about half the teams in the league right now. And Aqib Talib was talking after the Thursday practice about how he's improved his game, how he really wasn't happy with his 2016 season, and he's recommitted himself. And Talib was also saying that Lorenzo Doss, going for the number four role, has cut down his mental errors from the previous year. It looks like he's ready to handle that number four role that was vacated by Kayvon Webster. So you see a deep, talented secondary, a mature secondary, leadership all around that unit. Vaughn, now obviously, until Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett recover, you're compromised at outside linebacker. You're having to get by. But Vaughn Miller is his usual self. DeMarcus Walker is showing some things and flashes. I mean, it'll be fascinating to see how he develops. Interesting thing that Vance Joseph said after practice was that he said that when they drafted him, they actually saw him as a hybrid defensive end outside linebacker. It's just that this role he's got now, it's a little bit ahead of schedule, him working at outside linebacker, but they intended to do this with him all along. Very interesting. You haven't really had a hybrid defensive end outside, a defensive end linebacker who could move all around the front seven in a 3-4. You know, that's shades of Carl Mecklenburg. I don't really want to put the comparison on DeMarcus Walker. It's unfair to say, oh, next Carl Mecklenburg. I'm not doing that. Just saying that there's some potential there to move him around and have him be a versatile piece in the same way that Mecklenburg was, whether he can eventually become that kind of player. Boy, that would be a dream come true. That's up to him and how he develops. But certainly there is something there, and he made plays both against the run and against the pass in Thursday's practice. Great anticipation. There was one play early in practice where he's on the backside. No one picks him up, but still a very quick read of a run play, and he just takes off, and he's like lightning into the backfield, and there's not a lot that anyone could do if he's got to play red like that. So the defense looks formidable. Looks like if they can defend the run better than they did last year, and they can stay healthy, looks like it's a top three unit, maybe the best in the league once again.
All right. A position that I'm not sure has gotten any discussion so far, and I hate to say it, but the inconsistency of the quarterbacks at times, I think, has made this position a little bit tough to kind of break down, maybe even evaluate, but it is what it is. The tight end position. There's times where I feel like I'm seeing some stuff out of Jeff Heuerman that maybe shows what they were hoping for. Then there are other times I think he had a drop today. You know, I still don't know how I feel about the kid. I'm not totally ready to give up on him. Especially in this new offense. AJ Derby looks like he's a favorite of both quarterbacks at times. Virgil Green looks like, you know, at times the complete tight end they want him to be. Where do you sit with these tight ends? And honestly, with all the backs and receivers that are intriguing us, how many tight ends at this early point do you think might they keep?
Well, I think when all is said and done, I still think they're going to end up keeping three. Now, again, that means you may have to sacrifice something somewhere else, and there's going to be some tough moves. But I think it would solve a lot of problems if Jeff Heuerman could emerge. And you're seeing flashes now. It seems like, I'll say this for Heuerman, it seems like in the passing game, he's starting to make a nice play every day. And that's something that I don't think you could say at the start of camp or before, but he's starting to get open. He's starting to be able to show show what he can do with his range and his reach, to be able to get downfield and kind of pluck a ball out and use his size, use his catch radius to make a play in tight coverage. He's able to do that more, and that's a real positive sign, because the only way he's going to be able to succeed is to be able to use that size and use that radius to his advantage, because he's going to have to make plays in tight coverage. He's not going to have a great deal of separation on those short to intermediate routes. Virgil Green, he's your blocker. You know what you're getting with him. I think a good sign for Virgil Green is he was one of the guys that got a veteran day off. So clearly, you know, they know where they stand with him at this point. They didn't think he needed a day. They figured, okay, you can take the day off, come back on Friday. And then AJ Derby, you know, he just, when he's out there, he just always seems to make plays on the ball. So, you know, he's your classic F tight end, stand up, you know, can make plays in space, and he has value in that role. Not really going to do a great deal in the blocking game, but he can catch the ball. And the interesting thing with Derby is, if you've got a muddled situation, number three receiver, perhaps he can kind of fit in and do some things there. You've got, again, a tight cut coming, and if there are no injuries, the Broncos are going to have some very tough decisions at receiver, tight end, running back. It'll be interesting to see what the final equation is. But right now, if Heuerman continues on the trend that he's shown the last week, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a starter in week one, because he's starting to make some plays in the run and pass game and starting to be that kind of that dual threat tight end that John Elway wants in that offense.
Could you all of a sudden imagine if you had a Jeff Heuerman and a Jake Butt together, and they're both kind of cut of the same mold, and then you could go with two guys that could both block and go catch passes for you?
Well, you think back to 2012 in that iteration of the Mike McCoy offense, and you had Jacob Tammy and Joel Dreesen. Remember, that was the base offense, but Tammy, you know, really wasn't known as a blocker. Dreesen was, you know, more of the multifaceted tight end, and Tammy was more the F stand up guy. Well, it would take it to the next level if you had two guys who could be both stand up and could work in line. I mean, that would be terrific. And you know, you go to San Diego last year, you know, Mike McCoy, you know, he had Antonio Gates, and Gates has done an awful lot over the years, but he supplemented him by drafting Hunter Henry. And you know, you thought, okay, Hunter Henry's going to replace Antonio Gates long haul, and that's probably true. But you could see in the games when the Broncos played the Chargers, he found a lot of ways to get Gates and Hunter Henry on the field together. And sometimes you'd see Gates lined up right next to the tackle and Henry split in the F. Sometimes vice versa. He'd move them around, and it was pretty tough to contain them when you didn't know where one or the other was going to line up. So the possibilities are tantalizing. I think that would excite Mike McCoy.
All right, my friend, one more topic, and then we'll do another one early next week and have to knock one out before you have to head to Chicago with the team. But let me bounce this off of you. We started the podcast talking quarterbacks. Let's end it talking quarterbacks, because as you said, that's what everybody wants to talk about. I did get some reaction. I don't know if you did too, about our little idea of maybe playing a couple of guys, maybe both Paxton and Trevor seeing a little bit of time at that quarterback position. I'm going to give people my adjusted opinion to it. I want to know, now that we've had a week to kind of sit on it, almost a week, how do you still feel about it?
It's not the worst idea. I mean, it's something you have to think about. But that being said, I think since we discussed that, it hasn't been great for the quarterbacks. I think we had that discussion, and it was the first day that they started putting pads on, and then the next day they went to full pads. And I wouldn't say the quarterbacks have regressed, but I would say that the quarterbacks have had more thrown at them in terms of the diversity of options in this offense. And I think that has led to some struggles. So now I'm not really sure it's probably the best idea at this point, but we'll see. I mean, I think I want to see a little more. I want to get through another week or two, and then maybe I might think about it again. But I think right now, having seen what I've seen from the quarterbacks the last few days, I think maybe you just got to get to the point where you decide on one and then go from there.
Well, you leave off where I was going to pick up. The bottom line is this: after the week of practice that you and I have watched, it is time, I think, to try to at least get one quarterback working with the ones and just see how he does. And if you have to flip him out, then flip him out in the next week. I hope very soon we can go one full day, one guy with the ones, the next day, another guy with the ones, if nothing else. I am starting to wonder, and I'm not knocking the coaching staff for this, because quite honestly, I think they've been wanting to see someone be consistent. Someone sees the job. And it hasn't happened.
I have the perfect phrase, Andy. They want someone to, you know, they want someone to seize it. I think there have been opportunities for either guy to take this thing and to get a vice grip on it, and neither one of them has. And I think if there's any sense of frustration about the situation from the coaches, I think it's that neither one of them has really taken this thing by the throat.
I think that's what they're hoping, that, you know, and Vance Joseph himself has said it. He wants one quarterback to emerge, one quarterback to step up and take it. And that hasn't happened yet. And if the coaches are frustrated, you could understand why, because that's what the head coach himself has said he's wanted going back for 2 or 3 months now.
I'll be honest with you, I think everybody's frustrated. So we'll see what happens. I no longer think you need to rotate anything, because I just think you need to find one guy, let him find his pace, and let's get going. And I'm not trying to knock whoever the other guy is, you know, but right now I think you need to let one guy get it going, no matter who it is. I will tell you, I was accused by a San Diego listener of being a Paxton basher. I'm not bashing anybody, but the truth is, if you don't want to hear the truth as I see it, then I won't give it to you. But my truth is this simple. I'm concerned about the number of picks that have shown up in 7-on-7 for Paxton. And yeah, I'm not going to back off that until he throws less of those. When Vance Joseph talks about decision-making and trust, it's not to turn the ball over. It's not to force it into double coverage. And so I hope he can quit doing it soon. You know, and again, I'm not writing it. I can't say it enough. If Paxton does not win the job this year, I don't think you write him off. Matter of fact, I almost want to be more cautious with Paxton, because I don't want to see a young kid get ruined. And I know that Trevor's already gone through the rigors and the war that is a whole full season of this thing. So I'm a little more hesitant to put Paxton out there till I really believe the kid is ready. And I'll just say it, I still don't believe, after, what, 8 days, 5 days, whatever it's been, I just don't believe he's ready yet. So we'll see where it goes.
And let's go back to just last year. We knew that he was a potentially a multi-year project. There's a lot of people who are saying out there that if Paxton Lynch isn't a starter in year two, he's a bust. And I'm sorry, I don't buy that. Admittedly, maybe I have a little bit of more of an old school notion of how you develop quarterbacks, but I remember when it would sometimes be 2-3 years. And you know what? And I know this guy took a different route to his success, but there's a guy going into the Hall of Fame this weekend who went through a camp and got cut, and then went to the Arena League and went to NFL Europe, and then went through a season as a backup, and then went through another camp and then started. So he went through 94 through 98. He went through 5 seasons before he finally got a starting job, and he became a Hall of Famer, and that was Kurt Warner. I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not writing, if a guy doesn't earn a starting job in the second year, I'm not writing him off. I don't care how many people would do that. So if Paxton Lynch isn't your starter in year two, I'm not saying I will not say he's a bust. I don't care how many people out there are going to say that. That's just asinine logic.
Well, and I'm with you. And you know why you used to develop quarterbacks? Because the offenses they ran in college, oftentimes a wishbone, and there wasn't a ton of throwing attacks in the college game. You had to come in and teach them how to do things at the pro level. We're just back to that. Now, people don't want to accept that, because all these offenses are spread and you're throwing the ball, so it looks like quarterbacks are throwing the ball. They should be ready to play the position. What Paxton is struggling with, I think, is reading the defenses. I just don't think he gets out there and he's quite comfortable with what he's looking at. And I say that because of the results that we've seen in 7-on-7. He cannot figure out what the secondaries are doing. And that's why he keeps throwing picks and making wrong decisions. And he needs to learn how to read a defense better. And it's a shame that his college didn't teach him how to read a defense better. And we've all talked about it. I get it. College coaches aren't paid to get NFL players ready. They're paid to keep their jobs. They have a livelihood to continue, and that's fine. But then all NFL fans have to understand that a lot of these spread college quarterbacks, and Paxton's not the only one dealing with this. Go tell me where Bryce Petty is for the Jets. We could go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. A guy struggling with the same thing. This doesn't make Paxton unique. The reality is, until the kid knows, until it looks to me like he's reading defenses fine, I do not want him trotting out there. And again, with the bear that this schedule is, I don't want him going out there early, having to pull him, and wondering what the rest of your season holds if it's a struggle to the point where someone gets replaced. So there it is. It's off my chest, and we see what the next week brings. Andrew, appreciate it as always, and we'll talk, I'm sure, early next week before you head to Chicago.
Awesome. Take care, man. Talk to you later.
That's Andrew Mason. This is the Horsin' Round Podcast on DenverBroncos.com.